Welcome to Talking Technology with Atlas, the show that plugs you into the important topics and trends for technology leaders, all through a unique independent school lens. We'll hear stories from technology directors and other special guests from the independent school community and provide you with focused learning and deep dive topics. And now, please welcome your host, Christina Llewellyn.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Talking Technology with Atlas. I'm Christina Llewellyn, the Executive Director of the Association of Technology Leaders in Independent Schools.
And I'm Hiram Cuevas, Director of Information Systems and Academic Technology at St. Christopher School in Richmond, Virginia.
And I am Bill Stites, Director of Technology at Montclair Kimberly Academy in Montclair, New Jersey.
Today is a really exciting podcast because we're recording it live from the stage at the Atlas Annual Conference in Reno, Nevada. We have a sold-out crowd here with us, and it's been a lot of fun energy. There's a networking break happening right now. There's been sessions happening all morning. And we are joined on the stage by Molly Rumsey from the Harpeth Hall School. And we are really excited to kind of get into a conversation with her. And Molly, you are very brave to do this live in front of people. So hi.
Hi, brave's my middle name.
Awesome. So why don't we start, Molly? Tell us a little bit about yourself and your role.
Sure. So I'm at the Harpeth Hall School in Nashville, Tennessee, and I've been there since 1995. Currently, I'm the Director of Information Services. So I oversee our library and technology department. I have about 9 wonderful folks in our department. And so it's a great place to be. Been there for a long time and for good reason.
Yeah, long time.
Long time.
What's your journey been like? How did you kind of come to this role?
Started as a classroom teacher. I was a math teacher. That was my passion, a middle school math teacher. And then had some really incredible mentors at my school who gave me opportunities to do things that I think I would not have discovered on my own. And so transitioned from classroom teacher, was dean of students for about 10 years, and then really transitioned into the more of the technology side of things, technology integration specialist. But a really a pivotal moment kind of in my career was when I was able to be involved with the Online School for Girls, which is now One Schoolhouse.
Awesome.
Yeah. Having that experience on the board and then transitioned into my current role about 12 years ago. So
tell us a little bit about your school. What's the kind of typical student that comes to Harpeth Hall?
Our girls are pretty amazing. So we've got about 720 girls, grades 5 through 12, and they are smart. They work hard, but they're also incredibly joyful. Whenever we interview folks to work at Harpeth Hall, they always ask what our favorite thing is, and it's always the girls. There's a tremendous amount of joy when you're in an environment of girls and young women. And as a woman working at an institution whose mission is to empower and educate girls and young women, it's a powerful thing. And so it's a wonderful place to be.
So I've had an opportunity to visit you on campus and just walk around, and I definitely felt that joy. There are girls everywhere, just every nook and cranny of that school, and your campus is gorgeous.
It is.
Tell everyone a little bit about where you guys are located and just kind of that whole vibe.
Sure. We're in a residential part of Nashville where we're just a few miles from downtown. Beautiful part of the city. We're in the Green Hills area of town. We have about 45 acres in the middle of the neighborhood, and so it's a beautiful place to come to work every day. Our girls feel safe where we are and just the way we're positioned. We're fortunate that all of our facilities are on one campus. All of our athletic fields are in one place. And so it's a beautiful place to be. And I've really enjoyed the change in our school. When I started in 1995, it looks nothing like it does now. Every building is basically either brand new or completely different. And so that's been really fun to see the evolution of the campus and how it's grown to meet our mission, but also to just provide more opportunities for the girls, which is great.
So we have Hiram, who represents an all-boys school, and Molly, who represents an all-girls school. I have a question for both of you, and that is the single gender experience. What makes that kind of special or different for each of you?
I'm a product of public school, so never really knew anything about single gender education. And then when I graduated from college, interviewed at every private school in town and was fortunate enough to get a job at Harpeth Hall, but didn't really understand what single gender education means. And for me, at a girls' school, when you have a place where you take away boys, you take away clothes because they wear uniforms.
Right.
The girls can focus on school and what's important, but they can also be little girls a little bit longer. And the joy we're able to see, there's things that I've seen on campus. My favorite story to tell is my office overlooks the main quad of campus. And one day during COVID, of course, I had my windows open because it was COVID. And I just hear these screams and squeals. I'm like, what are those girls doing? And I look out my window and there are sophomores and sixth graders together, literally rolling down the hill from the administration office to where my office is. And I said, you know what? If boys were here, never in a million years. And so that's what I love the most is that environment where girls can be girls and there's a true sisterhood and they love each other and they support each other. And I'm often asked, is it just so catty? And no, it's not. It's no different really than any other school. They're kids, but they really do support each other. And I just love seeing a girl who will come to us as a fifth grader who can barely look you in the eye. And then I see her 8 years later and what she's able to do. And so it's a beautiful journey of which to be a part. So I consider it a gift.
Yeah.
I would agree completely with what Molly said, because not only do I work at an all boys school, but my daughters attended all girls schools.
Oh, really?
Yes. My oldest daughter was at St. Catherine's and my youngest daughter is at St. Gertrude's, all girls. From an all boys perspective, JK to 12, we love the fact that our boys stay in the arts for so long.
Stay in the arts.
Stay in the arts.
Because they're not ashamed. They're not being peer pressured or bullied.
Absolutely. And so they're involved in the choirs. We have at least four choirs at our lower school level. We have a performance that occurs every year with all of the grades. And my son was in Oklahoma and he was in his long skirt and his bonnet and his makeup on. Awesome. And we've got this great photo of him dressed up and they're not worried about it. And that continues on into middle school where we have, you know, a very robust theater program. And then in the upper school, because of our coordinated program with St. Catherine's, that's when the boys and girls come together and work together in the ampersand program. So it's a wonderful opportunity for, as Molly mentioned, for them to kind of not be inhibited by having girls, in our case, be in that same location. And they can go ahead and explore and pursue passions that they might not have other experienced.
Yeah.
And for my own daughters, I mean, they are very strong women right now. And it's because of that single-sex education.
My daughter's also a student at our school. But when you work at an organization and the school is every club president is a girl, every captain of every team is a girl. And then they look at our leadership team where 8 of the 9 of us are women. And so that's a wonderful thing. The girls see that the leaders of their school are women.
So Molly, you mentioned that it's very joyful at your school and everybody at your school is very joyful. We actually say we love boys. That's what we say, is that we love boys. We're very intentional in that statement because you have to love boys in order to teach boys.
Yeah. Molly, we've learned, we know in the Atlas community that the title at one school is different than another school is different than another school. A director of technology is not always a director of technology. A CIO is not always the same CIO.
Right.
What does your day look like? This might take a while, but what's your either like your typical day or what are some of the areas of responsibility that go into your job title?
I'm also curious, how big is the department? Like, what does it look like?
Information services is library and technology together. And so all in total, including me, there are 10 of us. The library side specifically, I have 3 full-time librarians. I have an academic technology specialist. And then really our tech side of things, we have a help desk that's manned all day. We have 2 folks that really that's their main job. And then I have my wonderful tech director who I'm looking at me right now. He really makes sure that everything works. And I have a database administrator and then an assistant who helps. Without her, the wheels would come off. And so we're incredibly well-resourced as a department, which really speaks to what I heard Jeff Shields say this morning. You know, the relationship with the technology department and the CFO is an important one. And I'm fortunate to have that at Harpeth Hall. So, you know, the typical day, it's my office is in the library and our library is a pretty vibrant place. And so the morning starts with, you know, girls coming in and they're turning in books or they're coming and asking questions. And it's a pretty active day in the morning. And then it really just depends. Where's the fire this morning? Is it more on the library side or is it more on the technology side? I'm fortunate that my team is experienced and they know what they're doing. And so there's not a lot of fires that I have to put out alone. It's important to have a team and I'm fortunate to have one. I'm not a one-man show or a one-woman show, as so many schools have to be. And so I try to get as much FaceTime as I can every day with the girls. Again, that's kind of the juice that keeps us all going. And so, again, I'm fortunate where my office is that I get a lot of that interaction, but it's meetings at least once a day with the leadership team or with others. But I try to make sure that I go to the assemblies And then I go to lunch when the girls are at lunch, again, because that's really what feeds me is the girls. And so I wish I could give you a typical day, but there isn't a typical day, which is what I love the most about it. Every day's different.
One of the questions I have is that you're located in the library.
Yes.
And at MKA, we're a three-campus school, so yes, we do everything three times. But at our upper school in particular, and at our middle school, in an adjacent sense, we made a very deliberate effort to connect our technology services areas within, at our upper school, what we refer to as our academic learning center.
Yes.
So that's where our libraries are. At the middle school, it is close to that area. And structurally, the tech department, the ed tech department, and the librarians function really as a whole. I mean, yes, they're not organized quite in that way. What have you found from that level of coordination between all of those areas in conjunction with that physical space? How has that changed and transformed program when it's all kind of interwoven in that way down to the physical space perspective?
And it's all intentional. And that's the, really my predecessor really set that up, teed me up for that in terms of, we're fortunate our library is located in the center of campus, which I love. Library sort of upstairs, and then the more technical downstairs, our makerspace is downstairs. And, you know, so having everything in one place is important. But I think I also love the information services umbrella. And so it really does intertwine the two together. It's not, technology is not separate from education and vice versa. And so that structure has served us well. I'd say to new teachers often when they think about planning for their classroom, I said, I really want you to think about the triangle where the teacher's at the top, but then your librarian is here and our academic technology person is here. And so it's a triangle in terms of how we plan and how we support. We are very intentional. We don't have library and technology classes. They're not separate. And so all of the skills that the girls get, they get in conjunction with collaboration with the teachers and my team. It's worked really well for us. I think that's becoming more the norm, which I love. I'm seeing that more and more in schools, and I think it's important to really embed what we do behind the scenes in the classroom.
The thing that we've done, and I think serves us well, that idea of not having the classes, we've looked at it and we've taken the model of research. Mm-hmm. And when you think about like the research cycle and everything, yes, that goes into research, the ability to embed the ed tech, the IT, you know, like all of those pieces, I love hearing about schools that have done that because I think it takes all of those kind of like foundational elements for what we need to do to prepare our students for life beyond school when they get on to college and beyond, and really bringing it all together in a way that's building a life skill and not just simply an isolated skill.
Now, and do we have a skills progression? Yes. I mean, there are things that a fifth grader needs to know versus a 10th grader need to know. And our teachers are, luckily, we're fortunate that our teachers get it and they understand that collaboration. And once they, particularly again, new teachers that might come to us from the public school sector aren't used to the type of support that we're able to provide. And so it's a resource that our teachers take advantage of, and it just benefits the girls.
Molly, before we move off of talking about your school, and this sounds incredible, if anyone ever has an opportunity to visit Molly's school, it's really impressive. But can you just tell us, since this is at the top of everyone's mind, where are y'all stationed right now in terms of AI?
I have a group. We're getting together. So we've been having casual conversations. You know, of course, there was the panic.
Yeah, of course.
In fall of 22, and worked on some basic things just to put into our handbook and things in terms of, you know, just putting a little bit of groundwork to basically say, girls, if you're going to use it, you need to tell your teacher. That was kind of the basics. And I challenged our teachers this past summer. We said, you know, come up with a project that uses AI for good. What's something you could use in your classroom that the girls could use AI? And we were going to give, and I gave really good prizes. And some teachers came up with some wonderful things, way fewer than I had hoped. So it's still evolving. We've got, of course, every school has the early adopters who were just all over it. You know, my computer science teacher, he's like, I have the girls put something in, and then they find the mistakes and loves it. But we have a little group that are getting together this summer to really look at the mission of our school and how we can provide some guidelines and philosophy of AI for our school that sits under the three main tenets of our mission, which is educating girls to think critically, lead confidently, and live honorably. And so how do we use AI under those three tenets? So that's sort of where we are right now. I'm trying to help our teachers just exhale a little bit.
I love that you're tying it to your mission because I think a lot of schools are jumping straight into policy. without having a conversation about philosophy.
I don't want a policy. I want a philosophy. I think that's so new, it's hard to really have hard and fast policies. But if you put it within the mission of your organization, it answers a lot of questions for itself.
That's so smart. I love that. So let's transition now, because you as a professional are quite impressive. And I know a lot of people turn to you for experience. I know that a lot of times folks call you, you're always willing to pick up the phone. And you got involved a couple years ago with the Atlas board.
I did.
So tell us a little bit about your time on the Atlas board and kind of why you decided to step up in that way.
I was thrilled, first of all, to get the call. You know, I've been part of Atlas as long as Atlas has been around. You know, I knew some of the founders really well. And so it's been a joy to see how much Atlas has grown. And the conference is always something that I've looked forward to. It's really the best conference of the year for me. And so getting that phone call was, honestly, I was really excited. Just being a part of the board itself, such smart, fun people, and who are so committed to this. Their sole focus is how can we make Atlas the best it can be and to help more schools to do what they need to do. And so it's professionally, it's learned a lot, grown so much. It's work, which I enjoy. It's been a commitment I didn't take lightly, but I'm so glad that I've stepped into, because it's really been great. I've learned a lot.
You kind of alluded to this in what you said in terms of like about the conference itself.
Yes.
And I mean, Atlas does so much. The conference is just one part of it, but it's really this one big part, because it really is that opportunity to bring everyone together, to put them in one space, to be able to interact and to spend time together and learn and share from one another. What is it about being on the board and what you see and value about the conference? Like, how does it really speak to you in terms of what Atlas gives and offers to the community?
I love so much about it is we're with our people.
Yeah.
And so often as technology leaders in schools, we don't get the opportunity to talk to others who understand, speak our language. And so just the community aspect of it has been great. And again, having the board role of that has just made me appreciate it more, and how this conference is so important to so many people, and just wanting to continue to make it better. I mean, again, it's kind of the go-to for us. And so it's, as a board member, it's fun to be part of, but it's also been amazing to me to see what the staff does. I mean, Christine is unbelievable. And so as a board member, it really allows us to think big about Atlas and not have to worry about the day-to-day, but the conference itself, I'm rambling a little bit, but it's just such an important piece. And I'm so glad now that we're post-COVID and we're kind of back to where we were. It's wonderful. It's wonderful.
I think we all ramble a little bit when it comes to this conference, just because we're a little bit apoplectic about just being with our people and having the energy in the room. Even the staff at this hotel talks about how friendly everyone is, how polite everyone is. It's not always that collegial in every industry and every organization. Hiram and Molly, you both serve on the Atlas board right now, and we're really excited about something new, and that is that we've changed up our nomination process.
Yes.
Can you guys talk a little bit about that and what you think of it? Our NomCom did incredible work this year.
I've had the pleasure of being on the nominations committee and just excited to figure out more ways for the Atlas community to be involved in the Atlas organization. And so looking forward to rolling out this fall a self-nomination process, which we haven't had before. And so folks that want to get involved, they're going to have a way to formally do it in a way that's not going to be daunting, but also to help folks understand what the process looks like and what's involved in being involved in Atlas. And so we're really hopeful that not only will we have a group of folks that are interested in serving on the board, but also a group of folks that we can maybe tap to do some other things, even if it's not board service. So that self-nomination process, we're really excited about this fall.
Absolutely. First of all, Eric Hudson did a great job with that,
with that
committee.
Amazing.
I mean, he incredibly organized and very thoughtful in how he crafted this new phase of the nomination process. So I'm really grateful for his work in there. Mm-hmm. To Molly's point, it is going to be a wonderful opportunity to look for a tremendous bevy of ways in which this community can serve the greater good. Because there is nothing better than this conference. And there's so many ways that one can participate besides just the conference, that if you are at all interested, dip your toe in the water, you're going to find out how much is available for you.
Absolutely. For those who are listening to this podcast after the fact, they are not at the annual conference, which hopefully they will be next year. They may not understand that we had a little bit of a snafu at this conference. And it was kind of a funny snafu. And that is that when the staff arrived early and began its work of setting up this conference, we opened up all of our gorgeous, beautiful badges, and we found out that every single last name for all 500 plus attendees was Abbott. It was Hiram Abbott and Molly Abbott and Bill Abbott and Christina Abbott. Everyone had the same last name. So we had this little scramble where we had to put stickers on the badges and make it work. And I think that if that isn't a direct analogy to the work that you all do as technology leaders, I don't know what is. Everyone has been incredibly amazing. So I would like to know from each of you, Molly, you probably have heard the podcast, but these guys know I always have a couple questions for everybody. The first one is, what is your Abbott experience or what is your Abbott example? Which is, in other words, it did not show up the way you planned. It did not go the way you had hoped. And you figured out how to find white stickers to stick everybody's name, the correct name, on top of the incorrect name and kind of still just make it work and then laugh about it. So can you guys give me an example of a time where your name badges showed up and all had the last name Abbott?
I've got one. Recently, we moved over to an IP-based phone system. It's no small task to get that done, but usually if you're working with people that know what they're doing, you can provide them with a list and they will not only deliver the phones, but the phones will be assigned to everyone that they're supposed to be, so you can just lay them all out. We got all of the phones and a third were assigned, a third were not assigned, and a third weren't even accounted for within the context of our system. And thankfully, it occurred at a point where we were actually doing our laptop refresh. So we had space, we had people, we had resources, and we just had to move all of that to bear to get all that stuff done because our phone numbers were going to be turned off and moved over at a certain point. And it kind of left us with a deadline where we just needed to, you know, it came in, it wasn't working, it wasn't going to work, and we just needed to figure out how to make it work and really just grab everyone, like here at the conference. I'm sure everyone had something else that they should have been doing or needed to be doing. And everyone just has to go all hands on deck and you get it done and you solve the problem and you move on. And then you get everything else you need to get done, done. I mean, it's just—
Because otherwise the parents would have been freaking out trying to call y'all.
I think what's interesting is you talked about being able to adjust really quickly. Atlas has been doing this since COVID, the great pivot. And so it's in our very nature to be able to do that. In my particular instance, I use GAM to take care of my Google dashboard, which is a terminal service. And I had installed GAM on a couple of computers, and I was like, all right, that means I have a couple of projects listed on my dashboard. I'm going to clean that up. So I went ahead and I deleted one of the projects. And it was the correct project. It was not the one that I shouldn't have deleted. I deleted this project, and then all of a sudden I realized no one could log on to anything related to single sign-on. And we were about to have alumni weekend. So I know my advancement office was going to be going crazy not being able to access Razor's Edge. What time is it? It is 3:30 on a Friday afternoon.
Awesome.
When this happens. So I am making calls all over the place because what do Atlas people do? We serve as a resource. So I make a couple of calls and then like, yeah, this is a weird one. Do you have a backup account? And I was like, no, I don't have a backup account for this because it should have happened in this way. And it actually came from one of the customer success people at Blackbaud. They said, there is a way to undelete a project in Google. You have like a day.
Yep.
And so I was like, really? And I was like, yeah, so go through these steps. I went through these steps and I got it back on. It was an hour and a half of me just sweating profusely, knowing that the first event was about to start for alumni weekend, you know, at that dinner hour. And I was frantically trying to make sure that my folks could get the lists that they needed for all the different activities that were going to go on campus. But yeah, the pivot, the mentoring, the resource, I mean, make that call.
Undelete, friend, undelete.
I'm trying to think of a specific one. I feel like everything has the COVID stink on it when I think of
the COVID stink.
I think for me, it's just COVID. And then, of course, our having to pivot so quickly and then our learning management system not being able to handle the traffic. I think that was a panic that I had not seen or felt. And there wasn't a lot we could do other than help folks exhale and give them some alternatives. I don't know. COVID is just, it's, I can't think of much else. Though
it's
I know
like the
been,
black
it's
hole.
The black hole. That feels like it was a decade ago. So much we had to pivot and change and calm so quickly.
That's good. So a couple of rapid fires for all of you. One is we are sitting here on day one of the conference. So what has been the highlight for you so far?
I think the highlight for me so far, I hate to say it, was Hiram walking to the stage to present the Pillar Award and stripping down into a shirt that he had. I don't think anyone knew what was exactly going on.
I would ditto that.
So what was going on, Bill?
One of our newest Pillar Award winners, Matt Scully, he is always seen in a Paisley shirt. And anyone that has seen Hiram at these conferences knows that Hiram is always dressed. He's in his jacket. He's in his tie.
Not in a Paisley shirt.
Not in a Paisley shirt. No, not at all. And Hiram had been planning for the past few weeks and sharing with Christina and I all of the different photos of the shirts that he was going through to surprise Mr. Scully in as he came to stage. And he did not disappoint. I just knew that it was going to be impossible to follow because I had to get up on stage afterwards. And he definitely has everyone talking.
Yeah, I mean, you're still wearing that Paisley shirt. You're looking pretty dapper yourself. Very Matt Scully-esque.
It's my homage to Matt Scully.
Okay. What's your highlight so far, Hiram?
I tell you, for me, it was the Jeff Shields keynote.
Yeah.
I thoroughly enjoyed that. There were so many takeaways that I'm going to be bringing back to my business office and for my technology team as well, because it was very thoughtful, the key points that he had made. He was entertaining.
Oh, he's the best.
He was entertaining.
He never disappoints.
He was just like he was on the podcast when we interviewed him then. So that has been the highlight for me thus far.
How about you, Molly?
It was Hiram. I mean, I knew Hiram. He told me about the shirt. He did not tell me about the presentation of the shirt. And so I, because he walked up and said, I was like, huh, I wonder where the shirt is. And then I was, oh my. And here it came. And
music, so
it
was the music, walk on music.
It was Hiram. It was Hiram.
The one other thing I will say is going to be a soon-to-be highlight is the fact that Christina is going to join Hiram and I in the zombie VR experience.
That's right.
That they have here, because I know that we're going to have pictures of Christina to share with the Atlas community of what it was like for her to participate in the zombie event that we're...
I mean, could we ever just record one podcast without a discussion about zombies?
I don't know. Richard Llewellyn likes it.
Oh, yeah. These guys, they met my husband this weekend. This is not good for me. All right, final question, and as we wrap things up and head back out into the Atlas Conference to enjoy the rest of this amazing set of content and education that we've organized, my final question in honor of Molly from the South, how do you take your grits?
No sweet. Cheese with hot sauce.
Hiram?
Are they magic grits?
So in other words, you don't do grits.
Oh, you don't get the reference.
No.
Oh, it's my cousin Vinny.
Oh. Okay, so not magic grits.
Not magic grits. They've got to be cooked.
A grit. A grit. It's a grit.
New Jersey, how you doing down there? You look a little confused about conversation.
It would be a better question for Jersey is, do you call it pork roll or Taylor ham if you were coming from Jersey? The grits are not commonly served things, but I think I would go with the cheese and the hot sauce, and specifically some good Cholula.
Oh,
Cholula, nice.
Okay. On that note, I think we can land this plane. We've had all discussions, zombies, grits, and everything technology with Molly Rumsey. Molly, you're very brave for doing this with us. Thank you so much for joining
us
live at the Atlas Conference. It's been such a pleasure to get to know you better.
Thank you. It's been lovely.
This has been Talking Technology with Atlas, produced by the Association of Technology Leaders in Independent Schools. For more information about Atlas and Atlas membership, please visit theatlas.org. If you enjoyed this discussion, please subscribe, leave a review, and share this podcast with your colleagues in the independent school community. Thank you for listening.